Hello, and welcome to Science World. Russian officials say a meteor streaked across the sky above Russia's Ural Mountains Friday morning, causing explosions and shattering windows. But it looks like our planet has survived that close encounter with the asteroid that went zipping past us on Friday. A world-renowned scientist who helped pave the way for the successful mapping of the human genome joins us to talk about a new and revolutionary approach to health and medical care. And we'll have another brain teaser for you on this week's Science World Quick Quiz. This and more are coming up for you on VOA Science Health and Technology Magazine, Science World. Russian officials say a meteor streaked across the sky above Russia's Ural Mountains Friday morning, causing explosions and shattering windows. Local authorities say a wall and the roof of a zinc factory were damaged in the blast. Authorities say mobile phone service is working intermittently. Officials say that more than 400 people in the Chelyabinsk region were injured, many of them hurt by broken glass. The meteor hit just hours before an asteroid known as 2012 DA14 is set to have a close encounter with Earth. The U.S. space agency NASA says the 45-meter-wide asteroid could come as close as 27,000 kilometers above Earth. The agency insists, however, that that asteroid is not in danger of crashing into Earth. The European Space Agency in its Twitter feed says the meteor above Russia Friday has no connection with the asteroid. NASA's latest Earth-observing satellite rocketed into space this past week, continuing a program which began more than 40 years ago. Science World's Bob Doty has more.
3, 2, 1, 0, and ignition. And liftoff of the Atlas V rocket on the Landsat Data Continuity Mission, continuing the 40-year legacy of preserving Earth's natural resources from space.
NASA officials called Monday's launch of the Landsat Data Continuity Mission, or LDCM, picture perfect. The newly launched satellite is the eighth in a series of global observational spacecraft called Landsat, a collaborative effort between NASA and the U.S. Geological Survey. After about 3 months of testing and the LDCM is mission certified, its name will be changed to Landsat 8. Orbiting Earth every 99 minutes, Landsat 8 will be able to image Earth every 16 days as it circles the globe in a near-polar orbit. Two new sophisticated instruments, Operational Land Imager and the Thermal Infrared Sensor, will allow Landsat 8 to provide image and data information that wasn't possible with previous Landsat satellites. Data and imaging for the latest Landsat satellite, like those before it, will continue to be collected by USGS primary ground stations that are located in South Dakota and Australia. NASA and USGS say the information provided by Landsat over the last 40 years has helped improve human and biodiversity health, energy, and water management, urban planning, disaster recovery, and agriculture, which in turn has helped develop the world economy. For Science World, I'm Bob Doty.
It's time once again for our Science World Quick Quiz. A little later in our program, we'll be talking with a renowned scientist who helped pave the way for the successful mapping of the human genome. The Human Genome Project was a scientific research project that had among its goals the identification of all of the approximately 20 to 25,000 genes in the human DNA and determine the sequences of the 3 billion chemical base pairs that make up human DNA. Well, since the focus of this work seems to be on human DNA, what we want to know is, can you tell us what the letters DNA stand for? Is it A, ribonucleic acid, B, darmstadtium natrium aldehyde, or C, deuteroneptunium acetate? Do you have the right answer to this week's brain teaser? Find out in a little bit when we reveal the answer.
You're listening to Science World on VOA. You can also find us on the Internet. Our new webpage and blog can be found at voanews.com/science.
From laptop computers and tablets to music players and smartphones, mobile devices have revolutionized how we work and play. At the recent Macworld Expo in San Francisco, the latest applications and accessories for Apple's mobile product line were in the spotlight. Shelley Schlender reports.
At a downtown San Francisco coffee shop, it seems that everyone's a fan of mobile apps, including 4-year-old Elsa, who often borrows her mom's cell phone to play a video game.
I like to use Angry Birds
for the game.
She and her sister Rachel use their fingers to draw pictures on the touch screen of their mom's iPad.
And you tap on the thing and you get to pick your color, and it goes on the iPad or your phone.
Their mom prefers a more practical app.
I love all the apps that help me find where I need to go, because I always get lost.
You cannot trust this girl.
The apps are more business-like at a nearby table where a courier checks his phone for his delivery schedule.
The orders pop up on the map and we get to choose which one on the map we want. So.
Another man says he uses his phone basically as a phone.
I'm old school. I'm just calling, text, and a few apps here and there.
His old school apps include one that shows sports scores and videos, a photo gallery for snapshots of his family, and a music player. But new school apps really show off the computing power of today's mobile devices. This month, they were on display just around the corner from the coffee shop at Macworld Expo. Every year, the 3-day event draws 25,000 fans of Apple products, from Mac computers to iPods, iPhones, and iPads, to see the latest technology in everything from entertainment to work-saving apps that are sometimes as much fun as the games.
It sparks the imagination. Yeah. You can sketch wherever you want.
Movie animator Terry Scheel from Luxembourg is at a sort of doodling booth, drawing on his iPad with a pressure-sensitive stylus to create detailed illustrations.
I decided to work on the iPad because I thought it was an amazing portable tool to paint the way I wanted.
The app he's using is called Inspire, and Scheel says he's inspired by how similar this inexpensive program is to professional painting software for a desktop computer. The app was designed by Alex Kalajan, a computer programmer and amateur artist who wanted to figure out how to program paint.
I studied how to simulate oil paint, so when the iPhone first came out, I was like, oh, that'd make a cool app.
And it did, becoming one of the most popular items in Apple's online app store. It turns an iPhone or iPad into a canvas and a finger into a paintbrush. With a swipe across the screen, he swirls strokes of red and yellow, just as an artist might blend wet oil paints together.
And you can see that I can actually blend the red and yellow paint together to make orange. And we're always updating the app, so the next update's going to include more brushes and new features as well.
Down the hall from the drawing center, Canadian videographer Wally Chewinski shows off a concert video he shot with a variety of cameras, including the iPhone.
These days, you can have your camera in your pocket, you could shoot footage, you can bring it back to your office on your desktop or your laptop, and you can put together a professional movie in an afternoon.
There's even a laptop application that, with the touch of a button, lets a guitarist sound like a cello. An organ. Of course, the most amazing apps are no good at all if the mobile device they're on doesn't have power. At Macworld, tech industry blogger Chuck Laternus recommends what looks like a notebook, but is actually a lightweight, portable solar collector from Goal Zero. Its flat panels fold open like a magazine to reveal plenty of surface for soaking in the sun.
If I was going to a developing nation, I would take with me one of the solar panels in order to make sure that I have a charge wherever I go.
And with 500,000 apps to choose from on Apple's online app store and 26,000 new titles being added every month, mobile users need all the power they can get to try them out. For VOA News, I'm Shelley Schlender in San Francisco.
Okay, let's find out if you have the right answer to this week's quick quiz. In just a little bit, we'll be talking with a renowned scientist who helped pave the way for the successful mapping of the human genome. The Human Genome Project was a scientific research project that had among its goals the identification of all the approximately 20 to 25,000 genes in human DNA and determine the sequences of the 3 billion chemical base pairs that make up human DNA. So, since the focus of this work was on human DNA, what we want to know is, what do those letters D and A stand for? Is it A, ribonucleic acid, B, darmstadtium natrium aldehyde, or C, deuteroneptunian acetate? The answer is A. The ribonucleic acid, commonly called DNA, is an important molecule that can be found in the cells of every living organism, and that even includes viruses and other microbes. DNA contains all of the genetic instructions that are needed for a life form to develop and function. In humans, it's our DNA that helps make each of us an individual. Thanks for playing this week's Science World Quick Quiz. We'll have another brain teaser for you again next week.
Thanks for listening to VOA Science, Health, and Technology News Magazine, Science World.
Dr. Leroy Hood, along with his colleagues at the California Institute of Technology, developed 4 instruments that help pave the way for the successful mapping of the human genome. The devices that Dr. Hood helped create, the automated DNA gene sequencer and synthesizer, along with a protein synthesizer and sequencer, have become vital and essential tools for the study of genomes and proteins. His revolutionary work in biology and medicine has not gone unnoticed. Dr. Hood has been honored with a number of prestigious awards, including the National Medal of Science that was recently presented to him by President Obama. Dr. Hood isn't satisfied to just sit back and enjoy the honors that have been bestowed upon him over the years. He's a constant whirlwind of activity, pushing the boundaries of biology, medicine, and technology. His latest passion is in developing various strategies, technologies, and the knowledge that he thinks will lead to new methods of how the science of medicine is practiced. He calls his new approach P4 medicine, which stands for predictive, personalized, preventive, and participatory medicine. Dr. Hood says that within 10 to 15 years, his vision of P4 medicine could revolutionize how health and medical issues are dealt with. Instead of reactionary or disease-focused care that we've had for years, Dr. Hood's approach advocates a more holistic, wellness-focused type of care. P4 medicine will rely on new and emerging technologies that will allow us to gather extensive medical data on ourselves, including a good look at our DNA. Dr. Hood envisions a small machine that will take one little drop of blood from a patient and measure 50 organ-specific proteins from 50 major organs and tissues that will allow physicians to provide specific and personalized care for an individual patient. Dr. Leroy Hood joins us for this week's one-on-one segment to talk about his revolutionary vision for health and medical care in the not-too-distant future. After pioneering work in the mapping of the human genome, you're working and you're advocating something called systems medicine. Now, what is systems medicine and what are its benefits as compared to what we have today?
Systems medicine attempts to take disease and look at it in a very comprehensive and kind of global way. It attempts to use all of the tools we have for gathering data on patients, whether it be molecular and cellular data or classic medical data or even societal data. And the idea is that you can use these data to come and understand in very deep ways the mechanisms of disease, and that has inferences for both diagnostics, therapeutics, and prevention.
You see the future of medical healthcare in something called P4 medicine. Now, what is P4 medicine, and what does this approach entail?
P4 medicine actually is a convergence of three fundamental forces in medicine today. But to give you specific examples of what systems medicine is doing for us today is we can do a genome sequence for just a few thousand dollars these days, and that allows you to identify the actionable variants that exist in your genome about which we can do something to improve your health. I had a friend at Microsoft who had osteoporosis in his late 30s. He got an analysis done, and it turned out he had a defect in a calcium transporting gene, and all he had to do to cure it was to take 20 times as much calcium. So wouldn't each of us just love to know what our actionable genes are and do something to improve their defects?
What are actionable genes?
Well, an actionable gene, it's a variant that causes a defect or a deficiency about which medicine can do something.
You talk about today's approach in medicine as being disease-focused as compared to something with the P4 system as being wellness-focused. Can you explain the differences there?
Classic evidence-based medicine is primarily interested in disease and studying disease in very large populations and attempting to understand how to make the diagnostic and therapeutic approaches that are efficient. What P4 medicine will be doing increasingly is focusing on optimizing wellness for the individual. And we can do this in a number of different ways. But the whole point is, if we have individuals focus on their wellness, can we have them avoid most of the diseases that they come up with, especially later in life? We save the healthcare system an enormous amount of money.
With this approach, you're considering environmental influences. Can you explain what that is?
Disease is caused really by two things. You can have defects in your genes, or you can have something come from the environment and cause a disease. For example, an infectious organism like the AIDS virus. And the key for systems medicine is to be able to understand what both of these contributions are, your genome contribution and your environmental contribution. And we've developed very powerful tools that my guess is in the future, each patient is going to be surrounded with billions of data points and will have the wherewithal to reduce all that data to simple hypotheses about optimizing wellness and minimizing disease, a really transformational approach to medicine.
You see genetics or this approach to medicine as being used to develop individualized drug targets, which you say would make drugs enormously less expensive. Can you explain this approach to developing medication for the individual?
For example, in cancer, we now can actually cut out the cancer, we can determine the genome sequence of the cancer, and we can identify in that cancer defective genes, which in some case we have therapeutic treatments. We have drugs that can actually reverse their effects. So what that means is we can look at the individual and give them exactly the drug that's going to work for them. Now, the important point to make is that doesn't mean every individual that has a melanoma cancer is going to need different drugs. Rather, there may be four or five different kinds of drugs that will work in melanoma, and we just need to know which type the patient is so that appropriate drug can be used. And if we can focus on the things that work, that will lead to, again, enormous cost savings in healthcare.
The approach that you're advocating, Dr. Hood, in the P4 system is revolutionary, to say the least. And I'm sure there are quite a few roadblocks that are going to be put into place to prevent its implementation. First of all, convincing other physicians and medical care professionals to this approach. And, of course, you're going to be dealing with government bureaucracy with this. Do you see a way of overcoming these roadblocks?
I think what's key is to demonstrate that you can actually do things with this new P4 medicine that could never have been done before. And let me give you an example. With a company that I've worked with, Integrated Diagnostics, recently developed a simple blood diagnostic that can differentiate nodules in the lung and determine whether they're benign or whether they're malignant. And that's going to end up saving an enormous amount of money for all those patients who would normally get treated for a benign nodule that need not be treated. And it's already evident that the first payers that we've talked to see this as an enormous advantage. And we've talked with a number of pulmonary physicians who see it as an enormous advantage too, especially for the patients, because if you can tell a patient straight away that that's a benign nodule, then they don't have to worry and wait for 2 years to see if it grows and it is indeed cancerous. So I think it's doing things like that where the benefit is significant for improving health care and the benefit is significant for reducing health care costs. Those are the two keys, I think, to convincing skeptical physicians and skeptical payers.
One thing that I found curious is you had been saying something about that the P4 system will allow democratization of healthcare, and you see it benefiting the developing world as well. Can you explain what you mean by this?
One of the benefits of P4 medicine is it's going to dramatically reduce the cost of healthcare in the future. And my argument is, just as with the digitalization of communications and information technology, so there'll be a digitalization of medicine that will dramatically reduce healthcare costs. And when that happens, just as we've done with communications, we can transport that to the developing world and give them a medicine that they can afford, even at relatively low incomes. So the idea is, for the first time in the developing world, a successful medicine is going to be available, and that's what I mean by the democratization of healthcare.
By this system, I'm seeing that it empowers the patient more than anyone to be responsible for their own health care. In other words, you're looking at it from a wellness perspective instead of, well, I have this disease or I have this condition that I need cured.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Rick. There is a movement that was actually started in 2007 by Wired magazine editors, and that's called the Quantified Self. And in the U.S., in many, many cities, there are networks of people practicing the quantified self. And that basically is using some of the 60 or 70 digital devices that exist today that can measure quality of sleep, quality of emotions, pulse, weight, and a whole variety of other things. And in these networks, they're actually learning, self-learning how to optimize the use of these data. And the second thing they're doing is they're going to their patients, to their physicians, and demanding that they get in with this whole wellness orientation. So I really forecast that the patient-activated networks will emerge, and they'll be one of the major driving forces for pushing P4 medicine into the healthcare system.
So in other words, you see individuals themselves getting behind this movement and, in other words, forcing the professionals and the healthcare community to go ahead with this.
Absolutely. And we see very, very beautiful examples of that already today. I have a good friend that's been following his basic parameters for more than 12 years now. And about 6 years ago, he noted that he had a measure of inflammation that was way, way high. And he went to five physicians and just got turned away every time. Then he ended up as an emergency patient in the hospital because he had inflammatory bowel disease, and he almost had a bowel dysfunction and rupture. And he has enormous skepticism for patients, for physicians. And he's driven the one he works with now to really learn about what's going on.
That was Dr. Leroy Hood, world-renowned and prize-winning scientist. That's it for this edition of Science World. Thanks so much for listening. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to visit our new website and blog. The address is voanews.com/science. Along with program information, you'll find stories, links, and much more, so stop by and visit us on the Internet. Science World has been produced by Bob Doty, and I'm Rick Pantaleo. Be sure to join us either online or on your radio next Saturday and Sunday as we check out the latest in science, health, and technology on Science World.